Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the O2 Arena. It's been a familiar venue for us over the last decade and more because of the ATP Finals being staged here. Next few days, of course, the Laver Cup. But we're all here, the world's media, to talk to one man, Roger Federer. Because, as you know by now, he has made the decision to retire. And this is his final press conference as a professional tennis player. And I thought you might like to listen to what he had to say.
Roger, what do you think Reto Schmidli, to whom you lost your first junior match, 6-love, 6-love, would make of your career? And what would Peter Carter be saying today?
I mean, honestly, I think any junior that probably played against me back in the day, we would have never thought that I was going to be sitting here at 41 having my final press conference and looking back at all the many moments and matches that I played. So. It's not just for one person. I think I could speak for almost any junior, national, international, local. Because you do not think that far, you know. When you have a vision of being a champion, you see yourself winning one tournament or maybe becoming world number one, but not many, many times in a row and staying there for as long as I did. So that was. That was definitely very special. Look, with Peter, obviously, it's so unfortunate that he didn't see me getting to the top of the ranking and seeing so many of my most incredible victories. But at the same time, he was instrumental to my game, to my personality. He was not just a bigger brother, but he was also a mentor and a great coach. And if I played the way I played, you know, with my technique, it's probably a lot to do with him. And then after that, all the other coaches that came along. So I've been so fortunate, you know, to have the right coaches at the right time. And I felt I learned from each and every one a lot. And it's been a great career. Yeah.
Roger, Mike Dixon from the Mail. Could you update us on sort of what your playing possibilities and plans here are today? And if you do only play doubles, how will that kind of sit within the rules of the competition?
Yeah, but that was my concern as well, a little bit going in, of course, because this is an event, an ATP event that I don't want to mess with, you know. But at the same time, I know my limitations, and this is why I asked Bjorn if it was okay if I play maybe just one doubles. And I guess that one would have to be on Friday night. And then I guess Matteo would come in for me and then have to play on Saturday for me. Bjorn said, obviously, of course, that's totally fine. Bjorn spoke to John as well. They spoke to the tournament and the ATP if that was okay. And everybody said that was fine. So here I am trying to prepare for one last doubles. And we'll see with who it is. And I'm nervous going in because I haven't played in so long, and I hope I can be somewhat competitive.
One more time, Roger. It's Nora
from the BBC. There's been a lot more openness in the last few years about mental health in sport and in tennis as well. I just wondered if you could share the mental strain that both the injury and then your decision about the retirement has had on you.
Rehab was easy. Sure, there's ups and downs, and sometimes you're a little frustrated, but for the most part, I enjoy being home. Been on the road for so long, so no issues there. I get scared going into surgeries because I know it could mean the end of my career, so that has always been, I guess, the most emotional and most scary moment for me before I go under. But things are different nowadays with the pressure that the players feel. No need to feel sorry for us, you know, but we have to deal with it one way or another, but it's definitely not always easy. But I feel like for the most part, I made it work. Had a great team around me, I guess, because it didn't change very often. I had a really good solid base, and I knew I could always speak openly to everybody, and everybody would tell me their honest opinion, and I think that kept me grounded and kept me going.
Hi, Roger. Howard Fendrich with the Associated Press. Could you take us through a little bit the process that led to this decision, how it came about, and what made you decide finally that this would be the end of your playing career? And I'd also like to ask, you used the word bittersweet in your farewell note. What to you is the most bitter part of this, and what's the sweetest part?
I guess there was a certain process that started at the beginning of the summer, where you try to go to the next level in training, and I could feel it was getting difficult. So obviously at that point, I knew any hiccup, any setback for that matter, was going to be the one potentially. So that you're going to have harder moments, or that where you push too hard and you have to pull back a little bit. It's normal in rehab because you always got to stay in that corridor of doing enough but not too much, and I actually like that challenge because I really have to be in tune with my body and with my team of understanding how far can I go. And I think over the course of a few weeks and months there, we just have to really be careful, and almost to a certain level too careful. And then I guess I was also getting more tired, as you have to put in more effort into it to be able to sort of believe that it was going to turn around. You start getting quite pessimistic, and then I got a scan back, which also wasn't what I wanted to be. And at some point you sit down and go, okay, we're at an intersection here at a crossroad, and you have to take a turn, you know, which way is it? And I was not willing to go into the direction of let's risk it all. I'm not ready for that. I always said that was never my goal. I can't believe, if I look back at the last few years, that I went through the surgeries that I had to go through. For me, it was always clear that I was going to end my career with no surgeries, you know, before 2016. And even 16 was a tough year getting back from it. So any suggestions there from my side would be don't have surgery if you don't have to. And just know, take the necessary time to come back, because it is brutal. I think tennis is a tough sport to bounce back into, because you have to be able to play long matches, five matches in a row, every week, different continents, different surfaces. There's no substitute for you. So obviously, mentally, you need to know you have to be able to get all the way back there, and it's hard. But and then maybe the hardest part after that one point, of course, you're sad in the very moment when you realize, okay, this is the end. But I sort of ignored it for a little bit almost, because I went on vacation and just said, okay, this is it. And this moment came shortly after I was at Wimbledon, when I still actually truly believed there was going to be a chance for me to come back the next year. What capacity, I didn't know, but you know, I thought it might be possible. And then on vacation, funny enough, I didn't speak to anybody about it other than my team, my parents, Mirko, we knew. Other than that, nobody really knew. And it was perfect like this. Didn't talk about it. We're just hanging with friends and other families, and it was wonderful. And I only then, at one point, when I returned from vacation, I started to really discuss the details of, okay, where, when, how, what. And this, honestly, this period was then quite stressful, getting the letter right, the wording right, and then using words like bittersweet. And the bitterness is obviously you always want to play forever. You know, I love being out on court. I love being playing against the guys and traveling. You know, I never really felt it was that hard for me to do. Love winning, learn from losing. It was all perfect. You know, I love my career from every angle. And that's the bitter part. The sweet part was that I know everybody has to do it at one point. Everybody has to leave the game. And it's been a great, great journey. And for that, I'm really grateful.
Hi, Roger. Hector Nuns for The Sportsman. We've read a lot, seen a lot of people listing your career highlights these past few days. I just wondered, from your personal point of view, what would be some of the, having had a chance to reflect, what would be some of your sweetest and best moments and memories, whether it's titles, finals, matches, or just reaching your best level?
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't really gone into deep diving, thinking about what are those moments. You know, top of my head, obviously, you think about first Wimbledon, match with Sampras at Wimbledon, 2017 comeback, you know, win in Australia, 2009 French Open. But I know there's a lot of different little nuggets as you go along with it, and it could be something as sweet as maybe a quarterfinal, you know, at a 500 maybe, that I learned something from. Who knows what it was, you know? I'm sure that I have to really go back to the memory bank a little bit and think, like, okay, where were moments that meant a lot to me, and sometimes and very often they were probably off the court in conversations with the team or meeting somebody. I can't give you a specific example, but I'm fortunate that I can almost pick and choose which moments were the best, because there were so many. So again, I was very fortunate to go through so many.
Roger, Russell Fuller from the BBC. On a similar theme, how do you hope that people will remember you? And when you look back on your career, I'm not necessarily talking about individual Grand Slam triumphs, but what are you most proud of with the way you've played the game and the way your career has unfolded?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, and I mentioned this in interviews in the past, maybe, and this is maybe an appropriate time to say this again, is the longevity for me. I was famous for being quite erratic at the beginning of my career. If you maybe remember, I was famous for being not so consistent, you know, and then to become one of the most consistent players ever is quite a shock to me as well. So that has been, I think, a great accomplishment for me personally. Then people can judge if they think that's the case too, but for me, that is something I've really enjoyed, and that I've been able to stay at the top for so long and compete for any term I would enter and really go out there and say, like, I hope I can win the tournament for, I don't know, let's say 15 plus years. That has been a privilege, you know, sitting at the press conference and being able to say that, and not just saying, like, oh, you know, a quarters would be great. Yeah, those were the first few years of my career, but it was for so long, of course, that I also almost got used to it. But I think looking back, that has a special meaning to me, because I always look to, you know, the Michael Schumachers, Tiger Woods, all the other guys who stayed there for so long at the very top that I didn't understand how they did it. And next thing you know, it's like you're part of that group, and it's been a great feeling.
Roger, David Law from the Tennis Podcast.
David.
Roger, what do you think you will miss the most?
I think it's how it goes in life. You know, so I don't want to say love, hate, but the things you will miss, you're happy you're not having to do them again. You know, I love tying my shoes, getting ready, putting the bandana on and saying, like, okay, look in the mirror, like, okay, are we ready for this? Yeah, okay, let's go. As much as I love it, I'm happy I don't have to go through it again. You know, having those knots in my tummy, waiting all day, eating breakfast, thinking about, okay, tonight, got another big match. Oh, it's got another 15 hours to wait for it, you know. It's fun, but it's stressful, and it's slow days there. And, you know, a tennis player waits a lot. We wait for the moment for us to go out and entertain the people and do it again. Of course, I'll miss a lot of things. The little moments, you know, after matches, when it's all said and done, and the weight drops and you can go for a nice dinner with your friends and team and, you know, talk about other things, you know, than just about tennis. So there's so many things I will miss. But of course, the fans are at the center of everything. Because I lived through the COVID times as well, like we all did, and it wasn't fun. It wasn't great. I didn't like it. And I always thought back, if we didn't have the fans, it would have taken away probably over 80% of my emotions and of my feelings of what it would have meant. So I will miss that, you know, just every interaction on the court, off the court, running into people, I don't know where. Okay, that will still probably happen sometimes, but not at events as much anymore, and signing autographs, even though some is like, oh, I have to sign again. But, you know, there's these little interactions, and I know these people came from a really far away place, sometimes spent a lot of money and took time off in their vacation or even off from work and come watch me play. I mean, I'll miss that.
Simon Briggs, Daily Telegraph over here.
Yes.
You mentioned that you haven't decided who your doubles partner might be. I suppose a lot of fans are hoping that you might play with Rafa because it's the oldest of your rivalries. Would that be something that would appeal to you?
Of course. No doubt. I mean, I think it could be quite a unique situation, you know, that if it were to happen that for as long as we battled together to having had always this respect for one another, the families, our coaching teams, we always got along really well, and for us as well to go through a career that we both have had and to come out on the other side and being able to have a nice relationship, I think is maybe a great message as well to not just tennis but sports, but maybe even beyond. And I think for that reason it would be great. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think it could be obviously a special moment.
Hi Roger, Simon Cambers, ESPN.com. From watching all your interviews over the last day or so and reading everything you said and again today, it seems like you're handling it all very well and you accepted it. Are you surprised how well you accepted it given all your achievements on the court?
Yes. I was in a very, I guess, worried, scared place to face the music, the media, the fans and everything. And being able to talk about it in a normal fashion without getting emotional, just because I know how much it means to me. But I feel like I probably went through a lot of different stages. I don't know if you can call it grieving, you know, and then you get to the, and I really don't want it to be a funeral. I want it to be really happy and powerful and party mode rather than the other side. And that for me was my first thing. I said, if I retire and wherever I announce it, it has to feel like it's going to be fun and not everybody like, oh, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? Like, no, I'm, yeah, I'm okay, but I want to be happy, you know. And for that reason, I think that was also the part where I talked about, didn't want to think about it because I was not ready to, in my picture, seeing myself speak on a tennis court was impossible at that moment. And I think going through that has helped me a lot that I can be here today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, Roger. Manuel Sanchez from Agencia EFE. How do you feel when you see that a world number one like Carlos Alcaraz says you have been his idol during his childhood, and he's very sad that he's never going to be able to play a competitive match against you?
Yes, of course. It's disappointing. I was never able to play against him. Of course, I watched him closely, what he did at the US Open and throughout the year. It's been fantastic. And I always said there will be always new superstars in the game, and he's one of them. And the game is bright. I know sometimes people don't tend to see that or think that. It was the same thing when Pete and Andre left. I thought, okay, well, what we have here now. Guys who win slams, won every... there's never the same winner. Well, they got the same winners for a lot of years. It was Rafa, Novak, myself, and Murray and Stan. So for me, it was nice to see, you know, because that's what I always thought. I have a funny anecdote with Carlos because I practiced with him at Wimbledon one year when he was, I think, playing the juniors. And I thought he played well, you know, it was good practice, whatever. Just another warm-up, I think it was. And Juan Carlos was there. I was more excited to see him, obviously, because he's my guy. And then the next 2 days later, I guess, or the next day on my day off, very often when you practice with somebody, you practice again because you just have, and if the practice was good, it was just simple as to call again and say, like, you want to do it again? But I said, I want to hit with Juan Carlos, not with Carlos, because just I would like to see, you know, practice with him, and I'm super laid back in practice anyway, and ended up practicing with Ferreira. It was great. He didn't miss a ball. He could still be on tour. So I'm really happy for him also in particular that they're being this successful. Yeah.
Roger. Up the back, Craig Gabriel.
Yes.
You're saying you're satisfied with the decision. How much easier, if it was that made because of the last year where you hadn't played, you'd been with the family and the kids all the time, that you hadn't been at tournaments? So did that make it any easier? And once this week is over, what's the first lot of things you're going to do?
I mean, number one, I'm not satisfied. I'm happy. I'm happy with the decision because I know it's the right one. I thought about it. I've had a lot of time to let it sit. I mean, it's been a few months now. It's been rather stressful not having it leak out, and it's more worried about everybody around me who knew about it, who was getting asked every single day, how's Roger, how is Roger's knee, and when is he coming back? And they all very well knew what the situation was, so I'm sorry for them that they had to go through this, but so I think we're all relieved at this point it's out. I don't remember the question anymore, but then what I'm going to do next is I wanted to read a lot of what maybe you have written, and a lot of TV stuff I haven't seen, things that have been produced, like put together for me. I haven't seen really, to be honest. I didn't plan it through exactly every step of the way what was going to happen. I just said I think it's a good moment to announce it on Thursday last week because it gives people the time to either travel to London or, you know, just give a bit of a heads up instead of announcing it, like, let's say, like today. And I had no plans for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. All I had was practice, fitness on Friday, tennis on Saturday. And I said, well, see if I have to do press, but apparently the letter had enough in it for, it seemed like, for everybody that I could push the press all the way to today and yesterday, which I'm very happy about, which allowed me to spend time with my kids, with going after my daily life and having wonderful dinners and looking back and celebrate, to be honest. So that's what I want to do next is catch up a little bit, see everybody, and then go on vacation a little bit with the family, and I think it's a perfect moment for me to then spend time with Mirka and get on the phone with the team and just talk about a little bit about the Labour Cup, you know, how has this week gone and where do we go from here?
Hi, Roger. Joseph Riegel, Tennis Head. So many of your successes have come in this city, you know, at Wimbledon, and your two ATP finals titles at this venue. How does it feel to close this chapter of your life in London?
Yeah, that was clearly part of my thinking as well. Where is the place? Contemplated a lot of other things before the US Open, maybe, but I was. This was before Serena announced it, but I said I was not going to be there. So it's just going to, I'm just going to announce it, not going to be around. People think I'm going to be a stranger to the game and to everybody, and I don't get a chance to properly say goodbye to the fans and everything. So made me wait another month all the way to here. I wish I could have announced it earlier, but it all worked out. So I'm happy to do it here in London. After then thinking about it, this city has been special to me, maybe the most special place with Wimbledon down the road and here at the O2, having played here and qualified for so many years and won here as well. So I just thought it was very fitting. I've always enjoyed the crowds here as well, having Bjorn Borg on the bench with me for my final game resonated also in a big way with me, having all the other guys around. Just felt like I was not going to be lonely announcing my retirement. Not that I wanted to hijack this event or anything, but just felt, I always feel sorry for players who sometimes retire on the tour. They say, okay, I'll play one more match, and then at one point you lose and there you stand all alone. And it's just, obviously 99% of the time you will lose at one point because only one guy wins the tournament. So I just felt like this works very well here. And but I always wanted to keep the integrity of the event alive. That's why I had a lot of conversations with everybody. And I'm really looking forward to these next few days. It's going to be very special.
Hi, Roger. It's Franklin Stoker from NOS. You have been telling you want to get to stay involved in tennis in the future, but do you also already have a little bit of an idea if it will be on the coaching side or director side, managing side?
Not really. No, not really. I just wanted to let the fans know I won't be a ghost, you know. That it's funny, you know, I talked about Bjorn Borg just before. I don't think he returned to Wimbledon for 25 years. And that, in a way, hurts. You know, every tennis fan, totally acceptable, his life, his reasons, you know. But I don't think I'll be that guy, you know. And I feel that tennis has given me too much. I've been around the game for too long. Falling in love with too many things, love seeing people again, and that's kind of what I wanted to let the fans know, that you'll see me again, you know, and not just never again. And now what it could be, in what capacity, I don't know. So still have to think about it a little bit, but give myself time.
Hi, Roger. It's Stephen Higgins from RT Radio in Ireland. I'm just wondering, we all talk about the beautiful shots and the footwork, but how important has resilience and grit been in winning the big matches that you have in your career?
Yeah, people won't talk about that, that's fine. They will talk about the other things, which I'm very happy and very proud of as well. But you need everything, you know, especially grit and fight and all that toughness to come through and stay at the top for as long as I did. I think it's logical. It's not gifted or handed to you just to have that. For some other players, it's maybe easier to have that. It's like more ingrained in their DNA. I feel like I had to go find it and take care of it, which maybe is harder in my position. Me, I was more lucky to maybe was more gifted with racket head speed or that stuff. But so yes, I'm proud of how far I've come, because I know that this was something I really struggled with early on. I was criticized a lot, heavily, maybe sometimes even unfairly or unfairly, whatever it is. Why wouldn't I fight more when losing? Because they thought when I lost, I didn't give it all I had, even though I care probably more than most players. So I didn't quite understand what that meant. Do I have to grunt? Do I have to sweat more? Do I have to shout more? Do I have to be more aggressive towards my opponents? What is it? It's not me. I'm not like that. It's not my personality. And a lot of people then told me, well, you have to be tougher and not so nice, maybe, you know. And I tried, but it was all an act. And I just said, well, I'll try the nice way. Let's see where it takes me. And let me try to just be normal and be myself. And I'm very happy I was able to stay authentic and be myself for this long. Of course, I had to adapt to all these different curveballs being thrown at me, but I'm very happy I was able to have a good relationship with players, tournament directors, press as well, and that's why I think I had as much fun on the tour as I had. So I think it was probably a good mindset for me.
Hi, Roger. Antonello Guerrero from La Repubblica, Italy. I just wanted to ask, first of all, a legend like you have regrets now, if you think about your career? And what do you think about the new generation of players? Like you mentioned Alcaraz, Jannik Sinner. How different would it be from your generation of other players? Thank you very much.
Yes, of course you have somewhat regrets, but never really, because I do believe things happen for a reason. And if it wasn't going to be for mistakes made or wrong decisions, who knows? Those is what made me grow as well, and I'm happy it happened the way it did. I'm probably famous for having some tougher losses as well, but then also dealing with them and seeing it as an opportunity to get better, to grow from it. And I'm happy I don't have flashbacks at tough moments, you know, in my career. I see more the happiness, me with trophy, me winning moments, and I'm happy that my brain allows me to think this way, because I know it's not easy to push sometimes defeats and those things away. And I mean, obviously, as a tennis player, you also have to take tough decisions on the outside of the tennis court, you know. I always believed I cannot let my team decide everything and dictate everything. I am in charge at the end of the day. I am the one at the center, and I am the one to blame. So I'm not going to start blaming others, you know, for things I decided. So that's why I don't feel like I have regrets. Sometimes my only one is I wish I was maybe going to be more professional at a younger age. But I know that this would probably backfire at me as well in a really bad way, that I would have lost my hunger and fire way earlier, because I would have thought that I'm not enjoying myself. Too serious, you know, and I didn't want to be so serious so early. So I think I'm happy that my team, my coaches allowed me to be myself early on and dealt with my erratic behavior of super inspired for 10 minutes, but then shocking for another 30, you know. But they knew that those 10 minutes made up for those other 30, you know. So, so that was good. The new generation, I think it's going to be great. More athletic than ever. I think, again, with the players you're mentioning and many more, Zverev, Medvedev, Rublev, Tsitsipas, all of them. Not mentioning nearly enough, but the best movers are the best players. It's been like this for the last 10, 20 years already now, and it's going to stay like this. You know, if you see what they're able to do, I think that is going to stay this way. I'm not so positive about serve and volley. Just I think it's not going to happen, because I don't think players are willing to put their bodies on the line for a missed first serve and still sprinting for 2-3 steps and then having to walk back to the line and think that was for nothing. So it's just easier to maybe stay at the baseline after the serve. And then, of course, it's a full-on blown mindset, you know, the serve and volley play. But I think there is definitely ways to have an all-court game, a transition game, which I loved playing. I loved my half volleys. I loved my transition game. And I learned from the generation before me, Henmans and so forth, or Sampras. I knew if I hit it onto the service line, that is an approach opportunity for my opponent. They're coming. So that's why I better played 1 meter to the baseline, and then I can keep them back. Anything short, they're coming in. And nowadays, that is not the case, but that's fine. You know, I still think tennis is going to be really exciting, and we probably don't know in which way it's going to go exactly, but we'll see some ridiculous defending, some unbelievable power and great personalities, and I'll be the number one fan, so it's going to be all good.
Hi, Roger. It's Martin Herman from Reuters. The greatest of all time debate, I guess, will go on forever. Does it bother you where you stand in that debate, or are you just particularly proud that you were the sort of trailblazer that initiated this golden era?
I'm definitely very proud, and I'm very happy where I sit. One of my big moments, of course, was winning my 15th slam at Wimbledon, you know, when Pete was sitting there. Anything after that was a bonus. That was the record, you know, and then, of course, there was other records along the way. But then, of course, nowadays, I think, and it will only increase, players will want to chase records, and it's true. At some point, I kind of probably did as well, but not the first years until it really I got closer to Pete's record. For me, it was about how did I manage my schedule? Was I happy on and off the court? Did I like my life on the tour? And I did. I think I had the best of times. And obviously, the last few years have been what they've been. But no, I'm very happy. That I was able to win another five slams from 15 on, for me was incredible, and that I made it to over 100 titles and all that stuff has been fantastic. And then just my longevity is something I'm very proud of. So don't need all the records to be happy, I tell you that. Thank you. See you soon.
I should add that was not the assembled media applauding Roger Federer. That was the various staff of the Laver Cup who were on the sidelines giving him a send-off, which is perfectly within their rights to do. Not really something we as journalists do. We are colleagues and treat players in that regard. I should say that generally, if there was a player I was going to applaud through my career, it would be Roger Federer. I had the opportunity to be at his first press conference when he was 16 years of age in 1998 in Gstaad, his first professional press conference anyway, and I was talking to the Swiss journalist René Stauffer, who I believe was the only other person in that room in 1998 when Federer made his professional debut, and he goes back even further to 1996. But as you can hear, there's a lot of respect for Federer, everything he's done in the sport. There's a lot of interest. There's always going to be interest in what he's got to say because he is so interesting. He thinks about the sport in a different way to anybody else I've ever spoken to. He answers questions in his own way. He will come up with anecdotes and insight that I'd never have thought of. I didn't know when I asked him about what he would miss the most, that he would reveal things that used to make him nervous on the eve of matches. There was just so much in there. I'm sure you agree. I'm sure there will be various things that you haven't heard before from Roger Federer. We will be back on Monday to review the Laver Cup and also to talk about Federer's legacy generally and his career, his decision to retire. It'll be the first chance all three of us have had to get together to talk about it. We'll also review the Davis Cup that took place last week, the group stages leading to the knockout rounds. But for now, I'll say goodbye from the O2 Arena.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.